On this episode of The Checkdown, Kyle certifiably has lost his mind after Tiger's win at the Masters. We talk about his epic comeback, what was happening in the world when he won his last major, and what we think will happen next. We then dive into the first round of the NBA playoffs. And finally, the Blitz package heats up yet again, so stay tuned. But first, in honor, here's your jam of the week. This is Survivor with Eye of the Tiger. Great intro. I'm going to let it kind of play in the background here as we talk for the first couple of minutes, but I just want to check in and make sure you're okay, because the last time I talked to you on Sunday after Tiger won, I think you had actually gone insane. Are you all right? You back on track? Or
I wasn't sure I was going to make it. Let's just throw that out there. To be honest, it was the weirdest type of emotion, because I couldn't believe it. I've had like more exciting afternoons after a sports event has happened where I've just been like so pumped. But this one, it's not that it wasn't as big, because it was bigger.
Right.
But I just was in shock.
Well, I feel like there's so many things going on. There are so many things going on. One, we actually got to watch Sunday's round together.
Yeah. Which was
epic.
Yeah.
But not only is it the Masters weekend and it was Sunday at the Masters, but Tiger was in the final group, and it was kind of like, wow, this, you know, he's going to keep it interesting for sure. And Francisco Molinari, Mr. Just right down the middle, not make any mistakes. You're thinking, oh, this guy's not going to make a mistake anywhere, and he's just going to run away with it again, like he did at the British Open. But that's not what happened. He hit a damn acorn, on the 12th, and it fell in the water, and then he chunked it up there short on the chip, almost rolled back in the water again. And we were just sitting in your living room like, oh my gosh, this might actually happen if he can par this hole and then go on and birdie a couple on the back, what, six or whatever it was.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe it, because this wasn't the first time we've seen Tiger in the final group of a major post comeback, right? The PGA Championship, the British Open, the Open Championship, mm-hmm. whatever you call it, with Molinari, he was first or second to last group. And they were in the lead at one point. And so we've seen him close. PGA Championship, him and Brooks Koepka throwing blows. Mm-hmm. He was close. And so we had seen him be close before. So we were a little bit hesitant. And we were like, okay, we've seen this. There's a lot of golf that can happen in any major in the last nine holes. And then for me, the second that those guys hit those balls in the water at 12 on Amen Corner, when Molinari went in the water, when Brooks went in the water, Poulter went in the water.
Yeah.
It was like, and then Tiger stuck the middle of the green. I was like, oh
yeah,
shit. Like this he's set. Now he's set up. Now he has the inside track. Mm-hmm. If he just keeps his cool. But what made me so nervous was the 15.
Yeah.
15 is a par five. That's an eagle hole. But mm-hmm. as we saw with Molinari, there's water short, there's water long. It's a green that slopes back to front. Like there's so much that can go wrong. So I told you, we were sitting there, I was like, just get past 15, because you can get past 15, 16's a pitch and putt, 17, 18 are tough, but there's no out of bounds. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. And that just made me. So the second that, like you just mentioned, Francisco Molinari hit the ball in the water in 15 and Tiger stuck the green, that's when it was like goosebump city.
Yeah. Well, and so they were pretty neck and neck up until that point. And then on 15, Molinari ended up double bogeying, hit that damn acorn in the tree. I felt bad for him. But then
it wasn't the acorn's fault. He hit the tree.
That's a good point. That's a great point. You can't blame the acorn. What's the saying? The carpenter doesn't blame the tools.
Yeah. I mean, he needed to keep it down. He didn't. And he hit the tree.
But anywho, so on 15, so that was a switch, but on 15, Tony Finau was making a bit of a push there and almost eagled that hole to get back to tie with Tiger, but unfortunately he missed the eagle putt, birdied it. So he was still like two back or whatever from Tiger at that point. And then Tiger went on to birdie 16. And obviously all he had to do was bogey 18, which he did for the win. And he shot a 70, so two under, to hold him off and win $2,070,000 for the weekend. That's not bad.
Gosh, that's crazy.
You know, it's crazy to think too. So it was kind of a unique Masters, obviously, because of the Sunday. They had to push all the starting times up because of the storm that was blowing through in the afternoon. And because they had to push all the starting times up, they went to three men groups instead of two men groups for the final. And basically, Tiger wouldn't have been in the final two groups if it was just, or in the final group if it was just two guys.
Yeah. He would have been in the second. So that's what I thought. That's true, right? He would have been in the second group.
You would have been in the second group. But I think being in the final group really just got in Molinari's head. I think Molinari just fell apart. I mean, he doesn't make those mistakes. But when you're with Tiger and Tiger's making a push and it's Sunday at the Masters, sometimes you go crazy. And I think Molinari did that.
So first question. This is the first on my list. Okay. So since you brought it up, was Brooks and Molinari and Finau and Cantlay and even DJ missed a putt on 17, Brooks missed a putt on 18. People have talked about since 1997, the Tiger effect, right? Mm-hmm. You get Tiger on Sunday and people just collapse because just the presence of him. Is that still a thing? And did we see that on Sunday, or was this just Tiger's Sunday and those guys just hit a couple bad shots and he didn't, and that's why he won?
It's a good question. I think the Tiger effect is still real, especially with all the hype about, is he ever going to win again? Right. And then now, you know, obviously these guys aren't immune to social media and to news outlets. So they see all the discussion of Tiger and is he going to win? Can he pull it out? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I think then it's actually right there, maybe going to happen. And you're the guy that's supposed to hold him off. That's a lot of pressure. And I know these guys are professional golfers, but Tiger is his own breed. And I think he has an effect on other guys in his group, especially when he's in the final round. If he would have been in the fourth or fifth last round and made a good push like he did, you know, obviously they're not right next to each other, so they don't know. But when you have thousands of people lining every fairway, thousands of people at every single green, that stuff gets in your head. And I think it did.
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily Tiger and his game, because these guys are, it's a different beast than, and we'll touch on this later, it's a different beast than it was in 2008. Like,
right.
You don't have the caliber of athlete, and I say athlete, not golfer, for a reason, right? The caliber of athlete now is different than it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And so I don't think they're as intimidated by his game, by his physical abilities. But I think, like you said, the patrons, is they're called in this event, not the gallery or the fans, they're patrons.
Right.
For whatever reason. I would love to be a patron one day. I just want to throw that out there. The patrons, the noise. Like, I think on 17, Brooks Koepka had to tee off with like a straight buzz happening on the tee box. And it wouldn't get quiet because Tiger was on 16 and he had no mistake a hole in one and he's ready for his birdie putt. And people are just going, ah. And so he was just like, you know.
And Brooks, like,
he left this. Like, I have to tee off. And so he just hit. With people screaming, he just hit. He was like, screw this, I'm just going to go.
Yeah, he like walked, he was like lined up and then he like backed off and he's like, okay, hold on, I'm going to let it clear. And then it didn't clear and he's like, well, screw it, I guess I just got to go. Still ripped it down the middle of the fairway. But I mean,
of course,
that's a different thing that most people don't have to deal with.
Yeah, that's the Tiger effect. The Tiger effect is the buzz on the course is so intense that you're not going to get the conditions you're used to getting. And so it makes you uncomfortable.
Right.
And whether or not that had an effect on DJ and Koepka's putt and Molinari and those guys' water balls, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, man, it makes a great story, doesn't it?
The Tiger effect made Molinari hit the acorn. But, so. I mean, but I think, to your point a little bit, too, I think it's also the crowd and just the atmosphere. But Tiger, for about six or seven holes on the back nine, was closest to maybe the old Tiger that we've seen, like, just wasn't making a mistake and putting it in places where he knew he could score, right? Like on the 12th, when they both hit in the water, Finau and Molinari, he stuck it right in the middle of the green, the only place that you're supposed to put it, because it's not necessarily a scoring hole, to put the next hole, par five, birdies it. And you're thinking like, okay. And then the 14th, not necessarily a scoring hole either, part it. But then you get into 15 and 16 that are both scoring holes, almost eagled the 15th, birdies the 16th. You're thinking like, wow, this guy is just on fire.
Yeah, well, a couple things on that. One, he was throwing darts.
Yeah.
Like, that's, don't beat around the bush. He's throwing darts. He's out there just hitting every single spot that you need to hit. And what you just said is important, is because he's so familiar with where you need to be on each green. And I think he led the tournament in greens in regulation on the week.
Oh, really? I don't know.
I think so. And that's what it seemed like on Sunday. I can't remember him chipping. Remember him chipping once on Sunday? Because I don't.
Only on the 18th.
On 18. You're right. Good point.
Yeah. But I don't remember much other than that.
That was a weird, I don't know what happened on 18, but let's not worry about that. But he kept hitting fairways and he kept hitting greens. And like you said, on 16, he attacked the pin because he knew he could. On 13, he knew that the wind was swirling and the other guys were in trouble, so he played it safe. 15, he knew he just needed to stick the green, putt for, like, he made the smart decisions because he knows that course so well. And I think that was the difference. I don't know. I think the other guys know where they need to be, but they just couldn't execute.
Right.
I kept waiting for Tiger to like hit a ball fat or mm-hmm. pull it or push it or do something where he would like, you know, swing his club and be like, Tiger, and like talk to himself.
Yeah.
And every shot he hit, because one of the beautiful things about Tiger is every time he hits a ball, he tells you what he thinks about the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he hits a bad shot, he's gonna create an emotion that you're going to be like, oh man, he's not happy. Or if right. he gets a good shot and he's silent just staring at it, you're like, oh, he likes it. Like,
yeah.
That's like my favorite attribute in a golfer. Like Jordan, like, yeah, Jordan Spieth, mm-hmm. Tiger, Patrick Reed, Skinny Reed, that's his name.
His ploy to slow everyone down with the ribeyes obviously didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work at all. but yeah, I love that. I love the emotion. Like, hit the shot and you tell me what you think of it, and then I can kind of expect what to see from it. And love that about Tiger.
Right. And then I can think you're crazy when you're so pissed off and you only hit it about a yard further right than you were hoping that it would go.
From the pin, you're like, why did he throw his club into the gallery?
Yeah, like Tiger gets all pissed off and it's literally maybe a 5 foot longer putt than he was hoping it, compared to if I get pissed off when I'm playing, it's because I'm 35 yards further to the right. But you were correct. Tiger did lead the tournament in greens and regulation 80.6%. And he also led in putts per green in regulation 2.1.
Dude, on that course, 80% in greens and regulation is nuts. Yeah. And one of the things you said was he gets mad when it's like a foot the wrong way. But at Augusta, a foot is everything.
It's a good point.
A foot is on this side of the ridge versus that side of the ridge.
Yeah. What's a realistic score that you think we would shoot at Augusta from where they're playing?
Oh my gosh.
Like, is 140, that's reasonable, right?
I think I can break 140.
Do you?
That's like a triple on every hole. Like,
yeah, but think about how long some of the holes are too.
Yeah, but I mean, that adds a stroke on every hole, and we normally shoot 88 on a tough course. That's what, 105? You're going to give me 30 more strokes than that? Like, here's the thing. Like, I get it from a greens perspective, like, devastating. The
right.
slopes, everything's a tight lie. The chip shots, the chipping onto a green, having it roll off into the water on the other side. Like, that stuff scares the absolute crap out of me.
Yeah.
But if I didn't break 120, I'd probably be pretty upset.
You think so?
Yeah. That's a lot of strokes, dude.
48. It's 48 over.
Yeah, that's like double bogey on every hole.
And then triple on
two-thirds of them.
Yeah, 12 of them.
Yeah, like that's a lot of strokes, man.
I just think the length would kill us.
So let's talk about the length.
Yeah.
They've lengthened a lot of those holes, right? Mm-hmm. Five was a big part of the discussion on the telecast this week. They moved it 25 yards back. They played like 504 yards, and Tiger bogeyed it 4 out of 4 days. Single day he bogeyed number five. And I think they said like 70% of the field bogeyed number five.
Really?
Number five was stupid. It was a par five. It was way too long. The bunkers were in the perfect spot off the tee. You just couldn't get to the flag. It was dumb.
Yeah.
So on the flip side of that is 13, which is obviously well, in my opinion, the best hole in the course with the dog leg left.
Yeah.
Par five.
The bunkers, the trees, the flowers.
This is absolutely gorgeous. Pine straw, yeah. Fill, 2000, whatever that was, all yep. that stuff. Tiger had like 160 into it 2 days in a row, and it's a par five. So, and then 16, let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
The Sunday pin location with the slope on the backside of it, and everything, everybody sucks the ball in. It is a hole in one type, almost automatic birdie if you execute type hole. Mm-hmm. So, on two questions. Do we need to push the tee back on 13? Is it getting too short for a par five? Are we losing some of the excitement? And then on 16, is that pin location too easy?
Well, I don't think so, because I think the three other days they put them in really tough pin locations. And then on Sunday, when they want people to make a run, I could see putting that on the 16th right there where the slope comes back. That makes it fun, I think, personally. But I think that you still have to hit an incredibly precise shot to even get close there. Like, you can't be too far left or right, or it's not going to trickle back for you, or you're going to have a really tough putt with all the slopes. But I do think that they need to push the other one back, because there's no reason that on a par five, these guys should be having 160 in, because then you can still miss left or right, chip up, and still get a birdie. Like, you have an extra stroke, but from 160, these guys are using what, a 9-iron? Like, they're not going to miss that bad with a 9-iron.
So I'm with you on 16. I'm okay with it. I think, like you said, actually the pin location Thursday through Saturday is actually pretty brutal.
With
the
bunkers
surrounding it, it's really hard to get to. There's a small shelf that it's just hard for guys to hit. And I do think it adds an element of excitement to know that if these guys throw it in the right spot and all of a sudden it starts to come back and the crowd just erupts like, this has a chance. I think that's cool. But 13's got to come back. You got to pull it back. I mean, if you're going to make number five, 500 yards.
Yeah.
And basically force these guys to bogey it every single day, except with the exception of 30% of the field, then you can't have the most iconic hole on the course, the last hole of Amen Corner, be a short par four.
Right.
It's just ridiculous. Like, they have to either, well, there's nothing you can do. You have to pull the tee back. The tee is up against the trees as far back as it goes. Blow some of those trees out, give it 30 more yards. And you got to make these guys make a choice, right? Either you try to cut the corner, and if you do, you have 200 in and you're forced to hit a 5-iron into a tough green. Great. If you don't cut the corner, you're forced to hit a hybrid or a 3-wood or lay up. And that's that's the par fives that I love, is that I love to see the tee shot, because I want to see, oh, he hit that. Now he's going to have a chance, or, oh, he didn't hit it well. Right. Now he's got a layup, and that's that decision piece. And on 13 now, it's like, I think Tiger pulled a couple into the trees and somehow they just like falled on the left side of the fairway. And all of a sudden it was like 158 in. I was like, how did that happen?
Well, I mean, when you actually look at the scorecard for the Masters, 10th hole, 495 par four, 11th hole, 505 par four, 13th, 510 par five. Those are basically the same length of holes.
Downwind. 13 is downwind too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They gotta figure that out. But anyways, it was a very exciting win for Tiger. I'm glad that we got to experience that together. I know I've said on this podcast, obviously I'm a huge Phil Mickelson fan. I think I've definitely said on here that I never thought he was going to win again, which I still think to be true. He'll never win again, but, but it was, I found myself, even though I'm not a necessarily huge Tiger fan, I found myself rooting for him. And I think at one point I turned to you and I was like, I'm rooting so hard against Francisco Molinari right now. I don't know if I've ever rooted this hard against somebody. Like, usually you root for like, I want this person to win or this team to win. But I was like literally rooting for Molinari to blow it. And he did. And then I felt kind of bad, but then I didn't at the same time, because it was pretty epic to see. But
he did. Well, Molinari just won a major. He's doing fine. Right. And then one thing I'll say about what you just said about rooting for him, even though you don't normally do, is Edie, my mother-in-law, who is anti any athlete that's ever even jaywalked, was rooting for Tiger. I went over to her house the other day to build a trampoline, and she basically said, I have to tell you, I was rooting for him. And I was like, see, I told you, you can't help it, because it's just the comeback story it's the best comeback story in the history of sports.
Is it? We're going to get to that. Is it?
You want to get to it?
Before we do. Before we do. That's because that's a bigger discussion. One that we maybe will probably disagree on. So let's get into it. So this was Tiger's first win since 2008, or his first major win since 2008 when he won the U.S. Open. His first win at the Masters since 2005. So that was, what, 14 years ago? Isn't it like one of the longest gaps in golf history between majors won at the same time?
It's the longest gap between Masters for sure.
Masters, yeah.
I don't know about majors.
Got it. But yeah, so his last win was in 2008. So Kyle and I have gathered some data on things that were happening either that year or since then, since 2008. So I can start. I'm going to list off some of the top songs in 2008, the last time Tiger won a tournament. You want to know what they were?
Yep.
Katy Perry, I Kissed a Girl. Leona Lewis, Bleeding Love. One Republic, Stop and Stare. And Flo Rida, Low. Nice. That's a jam. That's a jam.
That's a jam. That's a good one.
Yeah. I also have some of the top movies from 2008. Do you want to take any guesses, or are you a movie guy? Would you have any? Would you be close at all?
Gosh, 2008, that was in the heat of college.
I know. I
was not watching movies. I have no idea.
Top movies, The Dark Knight.
Oh, man, that's an all-time favorite.
Christian Bale. Yeah, I love that movie. Wall-E, Gran Torino, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Good one, good one.
Taken, I Will Find You. And I Will Kill You.
That's very, very unique action movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Revenge, then, the whole thing.
A movie that I actually just recently watched, Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Wow.
Yeah.
Put the accent on you.
You got to say it like them or it doesn't count. So very weird movie, to be honest with you. I don't know why it's just everybody likes it because it was really weird. But
it's just a lot of first names in the movie title.
Yeah, it is. And then when they all say it like Cristina Barcelona, it just gets a little much for me.
There's a golfer that has a name like that with a lisp that you say it like that. It's with the cigar, long hair.
Oh, let's look him up. Let's look him up. Golfer, cigar, long hair.
It is Miguel Angel Jimenez.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he is a baller. The guy smokes a cigar every single round he plays. He's like 55 years old. Somehow he's still alive.
Yeah.
Don't tell me how.
I don't know how. Do you know how much the average gallon of gas cost in 2008?
2008. $2.59.
Ooh,
$3.39.
Okay. Yeah, some prices were high. And a stamp cost 42 cents. Also, grab some great stuff on the championships won in 2008. 2008 has some epic sports moments for championships. Because I'm just going to list the winners, and I guarantee that you could name what happened in those finals because some of them are such iconic moments.
Okay.
NFL, New York Giants won.
Oh, man, is that the helmet catch?
That's the helmet catch, 2008. Woo,
that's so great. Yeah, that was awesome.
They beat the undefeated Patriots, who were going for the first perfect season ever, 17-14, David Tyree, the helmet catch.
That was the day that I first started dating Stephanie, my wife.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't start dating them, but that was like the first day that started hanging out. Yeah.
Got it.
And I was so pissed off that day because I wanted the Patriots to win because I was like,
perfect season.
Boring Eli Manning and the Giants are going to take down like the record books. So I was in a worse mood than I should have been.
Oh, man. But hey, it worked out.
It worked out.
Yeah. NBA, Celtics beat the Lakers in the first of two showdowns. Paul Pierce was the MVP. The truth.
Was it a game seven?
No, that was game six. The 2010 finals went to game seven.
That's right. That's right.
MLB, the Phillies won. Whatever.
Whatever.
NHL, Red Wings, whatever. But these two you'll know. College basketball, Kansas.
2008. What happened in 2008?
Kansas beat Memphis. Mario Chalmers hit the three with the guy closing out right in his face with like 2 seconds left to go to overtime. Kansas ended up winning. Guess who was on the other team? Memphis?
Who?
Derrick Rose.
Oh, Mario dang.
Mario Chalmers took down Derrick Rose in the championship. That was also the year of Steph Curry's first breakout season in the NCAA tournament. Made it all the way to the Elite Eight. The only player ever to have 30 or more points in his first five NCAA tournament games.
Little skinny Steph Curry Davidson. Yeah.
He was like 6'3", 114 pounds, which yeah. is draining threes once he got off the bus. Yeah. And then college football. Florida beat Oklahoma 24-14. That was the classic showdown of two of the best NFL quarterbacks ever, Tim Tebow versus Sam Bradford.
the crappy part is Tim Tebow got the worst of the deal.
He did, because Sam Bradford still went on to make like $60 million over his career, even though he got hurt basically every year.
Somehow Tim Tebow, even though he won a playoff game and he had some legitimate success and he probably could have been at least a career backup for 15 years, Sam Bradford got the last big time rookie deal before they changed the CBA.
Yep.
And has literally gotten injured every 2 years for 12 years. And somehow people keep freaking signing him. I have no idea what they see in him, but he just keeps getting paid.
Not only do they keep signing him, they're big contracts.
They're huge contracts.
Yeah. It's not even like come be like our veteran quarterback for the league minimum because we know you've been around for a while and you have a serviceable arm as long as you're not injured. It's like, you know what? Come play 1 year for us for $12 million. It's like, why would you give that? Why? He has not proven to be $12 million quarterback.
He must do something in practice that we don't see. It's got to be that. It really, really does.
Well, whatever it wasn't enough to win the college football championship that year. All right. Yeah, Tim Tebow definitely got the short end of the stick on that one. Anyways, you also have some 2008 and beyond information and fun facts for us. Why don't you hit us with what was going on during that time and since?
I do. I have some stuff that happened in and around the time that Tiger won his last major, and then Alpha has some stuff that happened in the 11 years since that took place, right? So
yeah, okay.
I'm going to save my best for last because I think I have a really good one.
Okay.
So a couple that I have. In 2008, the first iPhone had only been released for 9 months prior to Tiger winning the U.S. Open that year.
No way, really?
So not only did people barely have the iPhone, it was the version one.
And to think that was only 10 years ago and where the phone is at now. Oh my gosh.
I know. Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, triggering a global recession. I don't know if you remember.
I do. Yeah.
The world fell apart in 2008. So that happened. George W. Bush was president when Tiger won his last major.
Okay.
Obama was elected our first black president and completed two full terms since Tiger won his last major.
So Obama was elected in November of 2008.
Correct.
Got
about,
it. Okay.
About 4 months after Tiger won the U.S. Open that year.
Got it. Okay.
Michael Jackson died shortly after.
No, really?
2009. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow.
So that seems like forever ago.
It does. Yeah.
So one thing I thought was interesting in sizing up the competition from today versus the competition from his last major win, here are four people that won majors in the two calendar years around Tiger Woods' 2008 win. Trevor Immelman, Stuart Sink, Darren Clark, and Ernie Els.
Ernie Els? I used to love Ernie Els.
Those were the guys that were winning majors when Tiger won his last major.
Fun fact, I have like Tiger Woods 2005 or 2004 or whatever the last Tiger Woods golf game was made for Xbox 360. Almost every time I pick Ernie Els to be the guy that I play with.
The big easy.
Yeah.
So I have a list of, just to complete this conversation, I have a list of injuries that Tiger has suffered in his career.
Oh,
and I think this helps set the stage for what the comeback actually means as we get into that conversation, right? And some of this is a little bit shocking. So in 1994, 3 years after before he turned pro, he had surgery on his left knee to remove two tumors. In 2002, he had another surgery on his left knee to remove fluid inside and outside the ACL. In 2007, he ruptures his ACL in his left knee while running at the golf course in the British Open. What are you doing, Tiger? Why are you running? Walk.
Wait. Wait, say that again. He ruptured his Achilles?
In 2007, he ruptured his ACL.
Oh, ACL.
In his left knee while running on a golf course after the British Open.
Why was he running?
I have no idea, but is able to keep playing, wins 5 of the last 6 tournaments he plays. What? What kind of story is that? I'll continue.
Okay.
2008, 2 days after the Masters, has arthroscopic surgery on his left knee to repair cartilage. His left knee is taking a beating, which is his pivot knee, which is brutal. 2008, before the U.S. Open, he has suffered 2 stress fractures in his left tibia and should rest for 6 weeks. That's before that U.S. Open. Then he won 2008. Later in 2008, 8 days after the winning the U.S. Open, he has surgery to repair the ACL. Later in 2008, December, injures his Achilles tendon on his right leg as he was running while preparing to return in golf. So the moral of the story is stop running, Tiger.
Yeah.
In 2009, he's hospitalized overnight for a sore neck. 2010, he withdrew from the final round of the Players' Championship with a bulging disc. 2011, he injured his left Achilles tendon, hitting from an awkward stance at Augusta. Later in 2011, withdrawals for the Players. 2012, feels tightness in his left Achilles tendon. And later in 2012, moves stiffly in the second round of the Barclays and later says he felt pain in his lower back. 2013, he's seen shaking with his left arm in the opening round of the U.S. Open, and then he withdraws. 2013, tightness in his back during the PGA Championship. Later in 2013, 2 weeks after the PGA Championship, gosh, this is so much. let's get to the good stuff.
What injuries occurred from when his wife hit him with the golf club when she caught him?
Oh, I mean, none on this list.
No.
2014, has surgery for a pinched nerve. Later in 2014, he's missed the Masters and announced he won't play till next summer. 2015, he underwent a second microdiscectomy surgery 2 days later. And then 2015... he has a procedure to relieve discomfort in his back. 2017, he undergoes a 4th back surgery, a spinal fusion labeled a success to alleviate pain that he is experiencing in his back and his leg. So legitimately, he had been getting back and knee surgeries for 15 years.
So he's kind of the bionic man. No wonder he can win tournaments now. That's not fair.
With how hard he swings the golf club... How in the world does he come back from these things?
I don't know. That's brutal. The knee, especially. The pivot knee would be rough.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, those guys throw their hips so hard at the ball, and that knee just goes crazy. I don't know how you swing.
Yeah, that's brutal.
That list was a lot longer than I anticipated.
That's okay. It's a lot going on there.
I saw you take a nap in the middle, which is your thing, so I get it. It's fine.
Yeah, I started to take notes, and then you kept talking, and I did kind of fall asleep for a second. So.
That happens. That happens to me. It's no big deal.
That is an incredible list of injuries that he has sustained.
Yeah, it's just out of this world. And so that leads to the conversation of, do you think this is the best comeback in sports history because of all of the stuff that he's gone through, the gap between the last major win, the last Masters win, and this current win, with all that put together, what comeback in sports history can top this?
Well, it's a good question. And I think when I was thinking about this question, I feel like there's 2 different definitions of comeback, right? Because for me, you can either look at it as a comeback of like somebody overcoming a bunch of injuries and it's a long process to get back to the top, which he's at right now, or the comeback like the New England Patriots coming back from 28-3 down and beating the Falcons in the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Mm, good point.
So like, are we talking about a one-off comeback like the Patriots over the Falcons? Or are we talking about a career, you know, being maybe at the bottom and then working its way back up? I don't know. I think as far as everything he's been through, obviously it's an incredible comeback as far as, overcoming injury and overcoming a lot of the stress and personal life issues that he was going through to come back and win a golf tournament. But I don't know. I mean, it's not like the Masters itself was a comeback win, if that makes sense. He was only down, 2? And Molinari fell apart.
True, but it is the first time that Tiger Woods in 15 majors has come back to win in the final round as opposed to being in the lead and keeping the lead. So true. Interesting that you say that.
Interesting that I say that, but I still don't think being down two strokes and winning is necessarily out of the ordinary for these tournaments, if that makes sense.
It's about the trials and tribulations since 2018 with the injuries and the off course stuff. And like, that's the comeback, right? Like people, and they've played this clip over and over and over of golf experts and fellow players and analysts and all these things saying definitively that they think that Tiger will never not only be the same again, but he'll never win again. And then definitely will never win a major again. And so for him to prove those naysayers wrong and win not only a tournament, but a major, but the major, especially the major for Tiger, knowing how he came on the scene in 1997 as a 20-year-old or 19-year-old, just winning by 9 strokes as a child.
Right.
It means so much more than any, I mean, you couldn't write a book like this.
Right. No, it's true. And I think what makes it even a bigger comeback is that a lot of the guys that are top players right now idolized him.
Of course.
And so for him to be as old as he is, to have players that are as good as they are still look up to him and he's still winning. It's not like people are looking up to Gary Player, you know, like this is a guy that's still on tour competing with these younger guys that he was the face of golf. And a lot of these guys, he's the reason a lot of these guys got into golf and started to play. And so I think that adds another layer to it where it's like, not only is he just coming back from the depths of his career falling apart and his personal life falling apart, but he's also doing it amongst peers that idolized him for years.
Well, yeah, Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth and Tony Finau and these guys were 13.
Yeah.
When Tiger won his last major, like they were literally getting into high school golf, playing competitively, like Tiger Woods posters on their walls, and all of a sudden they're competing against him in the final round at Augusta. Like that is, I almost feel like that makes it more special to see. I keep thinking like of JT and those guys playing against him on Sunday and thinking, what are these guys feeling? Like they can never imagine this was possible, and not because Tiger's so old and he's not 60, but it's because of everything he's gone through and how much they looked up to him growing up, that those two things together just are incredible. And before I forget, I forgot to give the last 2008 thing that I had. It's the thing that I thought about first. So since 2008, since he won his last major, Rob Gronkowski was drafted in 2010, 2 years afterwards, played 9 seasons for the Patriots, won 3 Super Bowls, had a Hall of Fame career, and retired before Tiger Woods won the Masters again.
That's crazy.
He had an entire professional Hall of Fame career in between Tiger winning 2 majors.
That's crazy.
That's nuts, right?
That is nuts. Here's where I have a little bit of a hard time saying that's the best comeback ever. Some of the reason why his life was such in shambles was because of his own personal choices.
Some? Oh my gosh, like 80%.
Right. I mean, the injury is something you can obviously, yes, that is a big deal to overcome a lot of those things. And so I can see that. But a lot of the like reasons people feel bad for him and the reasons that everything was falling apart was he did it to himself. So can you really give a guy credit for coming back for something that he did to himself? Yes, you want to recognize him for, like I said, overcoming the injuries and getting back onto the top of the profession that he chooses to be. But if he didn't make some of the life choices that he made, he probably could have been winning way more over the last 11 years than he did.
But I don't think you can play with comebacks the what if game, right? Like even in individual sporting event comebacks, well, what if that guy would have made those three or four free throws? Like that wouldn't have been a big,
that's fair.
These are the events that took place, whether self-inflicted or not. And if you look at the span between major championships and the personal issues and the injuries and all that stuff. And I think the most important part of it is the amount of doubt that people had in the professional community about his ability to come back and take this leap was so great and so high that the fact that it happened makes it that much more unbelievable, right? Like anybody that knew anything said that there was no chance. And then all of a sudden he does it. And people are just like, the sports writers are like, what do I write? What do I say?
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's a fair point. And, you know, I'm not saying that it's not a great comeback. I just have a hard time a little bit giving him so much credit when a lot of the reason why his life was falling apart was because of his own choices.
Yeah. And it's not, I don't think it's giving him credit. I think it's just acknowledging the delta between his rock bottom and his success this last week.
That's fair.
Right.
He was at the highest of the high before, basically as low as you can go, where people were saying he might not even ever play again, back to being a Masters champion, which is, it's pretty peaks and valleys, if you ask me. That's a lot of highs and lows for sure. But
exactly.
But I do give him credit. And I think one of the greatest thing that I saw through the whole thing was obviously the golf was very entertaining, and it was good to see him be Tiger again and win, which was cool. But at the end, he's always been known as like the stoic kind of hard ass, not really social, mm-hmm. not really. When he was walking to the clubhouse, all of the other players, not all, but a large majority of them were lined up, him going into the clubhouse, and he like shook their hand and hugged like almost every single one. And it was just kind of cool to see that, like, maybe he was humbled a little bit in that time too, where it's like, hey, it's not all about just business and being serious, and I'm not going to have any fun or talk to anybody or, you know, be social at all. But now that all these young guys are around, it seemed like he's kind of changed personality-wise too, which I think was a big deal.
Yeah, I think everybody's seen over the last couple of years, he's been, like you said, humbled and grounded by his trials through the last 10 years. And I think he understands how grateful he is to just be playing again. I think he's been saying that for the last 3-4 years. I just want to compete again.
Yeah.
Like whether I win another tournament or a major, whatever that, like all that aside, I just want to be in the mix and feel that pressure and hit those shots. And so I think he's so grateful for to be able just to put himself in this position again. Winning is just a bonus. And I also think because of that, his ability to be humble and kind of recognize where he's come from, he's become more human, mm-hmm. normal. Yeah. And he doesn't have that cutthroat, I don't care about anybody but victory type attitude. He's like, no, I want to hang out with Ricky and DJ and mm-hmm. Bubba and these guys. Cause you know, I'm just grateful to be here again. And that's why, like, the second he was like vice captain or whatever for the one President's Cup or Ryder Cup. And it seemed like he just wanted to be part of the team. That right. was such a different approach than Tiger's ever taken. And that's why I love post chaos, post. Mm-hmm. What's the best word for that?
Post turmoil
Tiger so mm-hmm. much, because he's a different person.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I think gives him now the upper edge, maybe moving forward. And this is maybe sliding into another question of ours, but I think because he's so humble, has been humbled and is grateful now and says that, I think that makes him a little scarier on the course as well. Cause not only does he now have the talent and the swing and all of those things kind of clicking back, but he's got a whole different perspective and mindset of just truly enjoying the game. That's a scary combination to go up against.
That is scary. And that's one of the things I wrote down was, can he become world number one again? Because I think at this point, is there added pressure because he's like, oh shoot, I could really do this whole 19 majors thing? Or is it like, I got the monkey off my back. I've proven to everybody that I could do this still. Mm-hmm. Everything from here on out is gravy. Like whether I win 2 tournaments this year or 1 tournament in the next 5 years, like I won the Masters at age 43 after 11 years of not winning a major. Game, set, match. Now it's all just gravy. Like I wonder what approach he's taken mentally.
Right.
Because I think that could really make a big difference.
I agree. I don't know if he can ever get back to world number one, but
he's number 6 right now, just so you know.
Is he really?
Mm-hmm. That is not that far away.
will he play enough tournaments to be number one?
That's one thing that's tough, is that when you have a limited schedule, you can't rack up the points like somebody like Phil can, who honestly plays every freaking week.
Right.
Like if Phil could play on the web.com tour on the off weeks, he would do it. Like what does that guy's, like what is Phil's, isn't Phil's wife like, hey, slow the F down. Like yeah. we have gajillions of dollars. Just play every other week. Like what's the big deal?
That's true. That's a good, but I don't know. That was something that I had, is like, unless he wins every single one or gets in the top 5, every single one he plays in, I feel like it's going to be tough for him to get enough points to really creep into that number one spot. But I wouldn't put it past Tiger that if he's close enough to maybe be number one in the world again, to play in an extra couple tournaments to try and actually get it. Cause
yeah, absolutely.
Why wouldn't you? But I do want to answer, well, not answer. I did some research because I wanted to just look at some other stories about comeback players and some amazing comebacks in sports history. One that I will say is obviously a huge maybe as of right now, but is a cool story. If Ryan Shazier happens to ever suit up for the Steelers again.
Oh man.
That would be tough to say that's not the greatest ever.
That would be really, really huge.
Have you seen him jumping on the boxes and doing all that already?
Is he really going that far?
Yeah.
Gosh.
They have video of him doing like box jumps and stuff. So
I think the difference is, and this is no disrespect to Shazier, because obviously what he's gone through is way more severe than what Tiger has gone through, is he's not the greatest of all time.
That's so, and I think that's what when we're debating this, and we talk about this when we do our little dumper awards during football season, part of it is because of what is the expectation.
And that's a big part of it.
Right. Yeah. So the expectation for Tiger up until 2008, 2009 was that like, you're the greatest golfer ever. Right. And then he fell. And so that expectation being so high made the fall so much longer. Not that Shazier has fallen, but the fact that he's maybe not considered one of the best linebackers of all time. But to go from not being able to walk and maybe never being able to walk again, what they told him, to perhaps maybe at some point in the future getting back, and whether he actually plays or not, you know, a full game, but maybe if he suits up and gets in for a series or so.
Or like he makes the Pro Bowl or something like that, that would be huge. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a maybe. That's a potential. One that I found that was actually really cool, and I had no idea about this. You know the famous surgery, Tommy John surgery?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that guy, he played in the MLB for 12 years. He was a pitcher for the White Sox and Dodgers. He, in 1974, he had the Tommy John injury. He was the first person ever to have an untested speculative surgery, now known as Tommy John surgery, which before that, anybody who had that injury never played again, came back as a 33-year-old, three more all-star appearances and three more 20-game win seasons.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy.
No wonder people kept getting Tommy John right and left after that. It was like the magic surgery.
Well, and imagine how scary that would be as a pitcher. Like, basically, it's your last resort, right? Because everyone before you that's ever had that injury has been like, well, basically like a horse. Well, you broke your leg. Sorry, you're done. You're no longer can pitch. And this guy's like, well, screw it. This guy says he might have a surgery that he can do. Let's make it happen. Now he's got a surgery named after him. That's pretty cool.
I mean, there's a couple other things I'd rather have named after me than a surgery, but that's so cool.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I thought it was a cool story. I thought it was a cool story as far as like just as maybe a rival piece to throw in the discussion of great comeback stories.
Yeah, that is good. Good research.
There were some other ones like tennis players and cyclists and stuff. And I just like, I don't really know, you know, boxers.
Yeah. If you don't know as a sports fan, if you don't know, then it's not as big.
Right.
And that's just what it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Fair.
Want to transition? NBA?
NBA. Yeah. So we actually last week we have to correct ourselves. We misspoke because there was a couple wins and losses that changed the actual pairings, because we thought that Oklahoma was going to face off against Houston in the first round, but they're actually playing Portland.
Yeah, there are some games going on.
Yeah, when
last pod.
Right. So, but there's a lot of great games, or a lot of great series. Golden State Clippers tied at 1-1. Houston is up 2-0 on Utah. Portland is up 2-0 on OKC. San Antonio is up 2-1 on Denver. Milwaukee's
San Antonio win tonight?
Yes, they did.
Shoot.
Milwaukee is up 2-0 on Detroit. Celtics are up 2-0 on Indiana. Philadelphia is up 2-1 on Brooklyn. And Toronto and Orlando are tied 1-1.
So yeah.
Any interesting matchups now that they're actually finalized and we have the right ones?
Yeah, I mean, I think so far, I mean, the Clippers coming back from the 31 points to beat Golden State in Oracle was just bonkers. I went to sleep at the end of the third quarter thinking, gosh, dang it, like we're going to get swept, like it's going out of style.
We literally, Shakiest Gun in the West and I were giving you so much crap about the Clippers getting blown out, and we went to bed. I went to bed, and it was like, then I woke up in the morning, like, what?
Yeah, what? Now I watched the last like 10 minutes of the comeback on my phone in the morning, and I was like, I can't believe that happened. First of all, Shakiest Gun in the West has no room to talk because the Lakers organization is just collapsing into a million pieces.
In shambles.
That's neither here nor there, as they say. Houston over Utah, not surprising. Portland over OKC. A little bit surprised that Russ And Paul George aren't better than that in the playoffs. But like we've talked about before, I feel like it's either one or the other, and they can't seem to kind of figure out how to feed off each other and really be KD and Steph or LeBron and Kyrie or MJ and Pippen. You know what I mean? They just can't.
They can't glue. No, and they're absolutely struggling from the field right now. Like, I don't know for sure, but in game one, they shot like 25% from three or something ridiculous like that. Yeah. Russ was 0 for 4, and Paul George was 4 for 15 from three.
Oh, gosh. Why are they shooting that many threes?
I don't know.
San Antonio is a hot second comeback from being up 3-0, for real. Like, they were crushing Denver in game two, and somehow Denver came back to squeeze that one out, and now they're up to, and now San Antonio's up 2-1. That could be, if it wasn't for Denver's comeback, that could be a sweep in the making. So San Antonio's DeMar DeRozan and that Trojan crew making a run.
And can you ever look past Popovich? He's the Belichick of the NBA, right?
Such a great coach.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Can you ever, even though they're the seventh seed, like, can you really count them out? I don't know. I don't think you can.
But what you have to realize, too, is seed aside, Denver and their playoff experience and that team and those players is so minimal compared to San Antonio and that coach and that team. Even DeMar DeRozan's playoff experience, like, the guys on that team have been there before and have done that. Denver is with an incredible record this year. Hats off to them. They just haven't done that before. Like, they just don't know what it takes to win a playoff series, you know?
And they're young. You're right. Jamal Murray's, only his second or third year in the league. So that's a good point.
Other side, Milwaukee up 2 over Detroit. Boston up. Good for you. Philly up 2-1 after Brooklyn stole game one, which was a huge shocker.
Yeah.
And then Toronto and Orlando tied 1-1. On the East, Giannis.
Oh, my gosh.
And since we're not going to do the blitz package, I have to ask you this question. Over or under 1.5 regular season MVP awards for Giannis in his career? Because he is un-effing stoppable. 1.5.
Over.
Over. Yes, I love that answer. Yeah,
over. I think he's such a dynamic player, and his size and his length. The reason I love him too is as appreciative as I can be of James Harden and his offensive skill, who's absolutely amazing to watch. Giannis does it on both sides of the floor, and he rebounds. Like, he is an all-around player, and then you add in the fact that he is almost unstoppable when he gets the ball on the offensive end.
He's the closest thing to LeBron since LeBron. Young LeBron. He can affect a game in every single aspect that you could possibly affect a game, and that's why he's so dynamic. And he's also, like LeBron, taking a team that wasn't expected to do anything 2 or 3 years ago and making them something just because of him.
Fair.
Right? In Milwaukee. And I think some of those other stars, you put them on teams with other talent and you're like, oh yeah, they're good. But like, you could put LeBron anywhere and put Giannis anywhere and they would compete because they're so dynamic. And I also think generationally, Giannis is in a position where in his like age group, he's in a perfect spot with like, 5 years from now, a lot of guys will be checking out. They'll be getting older, and he's going to be right in his prime.
Yep.
And he's not going to have a ton of competition. It's going to be him, Anthony Davis.
Yeah, it's a good point. Because even
Kyrie and those guys are going to be, a little older.
No, I agree. So definitely some interesting matchups. Boston, obviously, it's my team, but Kyrie had an unbelievable fourth quarter to pull them back to beat Indiana in the second game. They were losing by 12 at one point. He scored like 9 straight points, brought him back in. He ended up with like 15 in the fourth quarter or something like that, like 31 overall, something just absolutely crazy. 36 overall, somewhere around there. But I don't know. The Celtics are an interesting team too, because they have the talent to put it all together, but they're going to run into most likely Milwaukee in the second round, and that's going to be a tough one for sure.
Yeah, I was just going to say Boston-Milwaukee looks like second round matchup, which is going to be really fun to watch.
And Houston and Golden State most likely in the second round on the other side, which is unfortunate because that would have been a good Western Conference final, but it's okay. We'll get it one round earlier and we'll see what happens from there. I was going to do the blitz package. Do you not have?
I can think of something. You got a few?
I got one.
Okay.
But I mean, do you have any more NBA stuff? I feel like we're kind of in the infancy. There's still a lot of games left before anything happens. So
Yeah, no, I don't have a much. I don't have much more. I think, you know, we have a week or so before we know what's really going to shake down. So
yeah, I know we talked a little bit about projections last week. Do you have? Does anything change based on the two series that got flipped because of since the last time we talked?
I think I would have taken OKC to beat Portland coming into this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I would have taken Denver to beat San Antonio. I think that's the only thing that surprises me at this point.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, I don't know, OKC, but they're going back home. So we'll see what happens there. I believe in my boy, Russ.
That's true. Playoffs don't, a series doesn't start until the home team loses.
Right. Correct.
And the Masters doesn't start until the back nine on Sunday. Right?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Is number 12 that hard? An amen corner? Like, it's 150 yards. I want to play that hole so freaking bad.
I want to play it too.
Those guys on Sunday made it look like it was just absolutely devastating. And but although there's water and bunkers and all that stuff, it's still an 8-iron.
True.
Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, you just, I mean, you. I guess you just don't have a lot of place to miss.
Well, same thing, I guess, same thing about the players, 17, right? Island Green?
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, well, it's a pitching wedge. It's like, yeah, but.
Yeah, like the green on 12th, like, the 12th green at the Masters is like, it's not an actual island green, but it has a similar feel where you can't miss a whole lot of places.
Yeah, bunker, water. Yeah.
all right, so we're good with NBA for now?
Yeah, good.
So I only got one Blitz Packets question. It's because I recently went out to dinner, and Alex and I ordered some potato skins with the cheese and the bacon, and it was great. And I've noticed it's the last couple times I've got it. Not that we got it, get it all the time, but you know, every time we do, they usually bring out sour cream and ranch, which they're basically the same thing other than some herbs and spices in the ranch, right? So my question is, when you're a potato skin guy, are you dipping it in the ranch or the sour cream?
So I am a big ranch fan. However, when it comes to certain things like potatoes and quesadillas, it's all about sour cream.
Oh yeah. Quesadillas for sure. Got to go sour cream.
Got to go sour cream. So I think with a baked potato or a twice baked potato or potato skins, you got to go sour cream.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like ranch is just a little much. Like there's a lot of seasoning. There's a lot of this, there's a lot of that. And if you have a good potato skin with the green onions and all of the cheese and all that stuff.
Bacon. Like,
yeah, you've got enough in there already. You don't necessarily need to like go over the top. You just need a little something, something.
Yeah.
So I go sour cream for sure.
Okay. They're different consistencies too, right? Like sour cream is much thicker than the ranch. So if that plays a part in your palate, you know, profile, that may be something. I found myself being a ranch guy. Even just with
interesting.
Yeah. But I do love sour cream. And like you said, and then I started to think like when do I use sour cream more? Quesadillas, tacos, burritos, those sorts of things. I feel like it has to be the sour cream.
Yeah. For some reason, a quesadilla with sour cream is just,
it's legit
where it's at.
So one time I got to tell you another funny story about potato skins. Dan is in a band, obviously. And my Thunder Dan. And when, he had a show one time and we went out to this like Irish restaurant after, and we ordered potato skins. And you know, when you order potato skins, you're thinking like, hey, I'm going to get the whole nine, right? Like the bacon, everything is going to come on cheesy. They bring out the potato skins and it's just the big potato, you know, wedges with cheese on top. And we're kind of like, that is a huge bummer. You know, like they didn't put bacon on there. Dip it in the ranch, of course. I just answered that my own question. Take a bite. The bacon is underneath the cheese.
What?
They had basically dug out a little of the potato, layered a fat strip of bacon, and then put cheese on top, baked those babies in there. What a pleasant surprise.
That is called going the extra mile, my friend.
Yes, absolutely.
So what I was going to say before the bacon comment was, without all that stuff, it's just a thick fry.
Exactly.
So it's going to be just a thick fry. Like you go with the ranch because it's fry and you dip fries in ranch is what it is, right?
Fair.
Anybody from New York or the East Coast is listening. Yeah, we put ranch on things, get over it.
and ketchup on hot dogs. That apparently is a sin everywhere else.
Get over that too. You guys have too many people. So we get over that. So, but if you put all the stuff on it, then I feel like it shifts from a fry to like a entree wedge. Or something, and then you just top it with something like sour cream. So it's interesting, like how many toppings you put on it, like decides which side you're going to use.
What level of food it is. But speaking of expectations, the wedge, when you order potato, whatever, you expect to have bacon on it. So my expectation when I ordered it was sky high with the bacon. When it came out, sky low, because there was no bacon. Then the bite in the middle and finding the bacon underneath the cheese, back to the top. I had my own Tiger Woods career eating the potato wedges.
That is like the best story. That's just
honestly, the next time you see Dan, ask him about bacon under the cheese, because then it became a joke. Whenever anyone like was surprised about anything, it was, that's the bacon under the cheese, you know? So it's great.
They didn't have to do that. Like, they could have put the bacon on the cheese and it would have been much easier.
Exactly.
But like, you take that extra step and take people from disappointment to happiness, and that just makes the experience.
And you're right, because also it wasn't the like kind of fake bacon bits under there. It was like, you could tell like legit bacon that they had cut up. So like these were like real legit potato skins.
It's like starting a song in a bar that's with like opera, and people are like, what are you doing? And all of a sudden it turns into like a hip hop song, and you're like, yeah, I knew this was the intro to Gangster's Paradise. I just never heard it before.
Exactly. Anyways, that was my one Blitz Package question. So
I asked you all mine already, because I just couldn't help myself with Tiger and everything.
So, well, that's good. That's probably for the best, because once we go down the potato skins route, there's no telling where the conversation might go. So we should probably just put an end to it right now. Well, good. Well, that was a good one. So we'll do the same damn thing next week. The draft is next week. That'll be fun. We'll have some info on the Pac-12 players, as well as some of the top name players. Kyler Murray is obviously going to be the biggest discussion we'll have, but it'll be an interesting time. We're going to see if we can get Andrew Ross back on for that too. But
awesome. I think next week is the start. It's not really the start of football season, but it's the start of the football conversations. Mm-hmm. And that obviously is exciting for us.
Absolutely. Can't agree more. If we can get Andrew Ross on, I'm not saying we will, because I want to keep the expectations. No, I'm going to say we are. And then if he doesn't come, then everyone's so sad. And then we'll maybe surprise you and he does come on. All sorts of emotions. The emotional roller coaster for sure. But anywho, this is a good one. Kyle, we'll do the same damn thing next week.
All right, you got it, buddy.
All right, see ya.